Hello, and welcome to today's podcast of Heart Investors. My name is Brian Meshkin, and I'm privileged to host this podcast. Today, we are honored to have as our guest, John Parker, the Managing Director and Founder of Spring Hood Ventures. Welcome, John, to Heart Investors Podcast.
Thanks, Brian. Pleasure to be here with you.
It's awesome to have you. Well, John is a great guy and has an incredible story. I'm really looking forward to everyone hearing about it. He's a fellow heart investor who's really making a positive impact in the world. Having helped grow, from my background, the world's largest nonprofit dedicated to childhood injury prevention many years ago, which was originally founded as the National Safe Kids Campaign, and today is called Safe Kids Worldwide, childhood health is a cause very near to my heart, and I'm hoping a lot of you listening today will also feel the same kinship there. And so I'm so excited to have my friend John Parker on the show. John founded Spring Hood to address the funding gap in child health innovation. He has brought 25 successful years in the alternative investment industry together with over a decade of philanthropic experiences to create this new model that uses investment dollars to make a difference in the lives of kids. This model really evolved or emerged from his work as the founder and managing director of CH Innovations, a child health venture fund backed by the Charles H. Hood Foundation, where he also serves as a trustee. But before we get started, let's pause and say a quick word on behalf of one of our sponsors, Cancer Fund. If you've ever donated to a cancer research foundation in the hopes of helping stop cancer, then you may want to learn more about how to invest in Cancer Fund. Cancer Fund is a community of people sharing a passion to change the future of cancer now. They believe that innovation is the key to improving cancer prevention, diagnosis, intervention, and outcomes, and they're committed to helping promising solutions get from the lab to patients. They support promising developments in their earliest stages where financial support can make the difference between a great research idea and a breakthrough in cancer care. So why would someone invest $500 or more in Cancer Fund One? Well, to help cancer patients at the end of the day. I've been inspired by the team at Cancer Fund and recently joined them as a venture partner. To learn more about investing into Cancer Fund, or if you're looking for an investment into your early stage company that is looking to make a positive impact for cancer patients, please visit www.cancerfund.com. All right, now that we got the little advertisement out of the way, let's get started. It's the question, John, that I ask everyone who comes on the show. It's really about what inspires them. So, John, tell us what inspired you to start Spring Hood Ventures.
Good. First, I'll say thank you again for inviting me on the podcast. It's really a fun opportunity for me to talk to you about this today, Brian.
Awesome.
So the short answer is that I got into this because, and I set up Spring Hood Ventures, because there are so many great opportunities and startups to invest in things that are going to save the lives of kids. While getting great financial returns as a venture investor. The longer answer is, it goes back a bit. So I got into this, as you referenced in your very kind intro there. I got into this through my role as a trustee of a foundation here in Boston called the Charles H. Hood Foundation. I've been trustee there since 2008. We are an 80-year-old private foundation that has always supported pediatric research. We do this across all sorts of indications and specialties, everything from biology to public health. We've had the privilege of supporting just amazing rock star researchers and who have done a lot of really important work. However, a few years into my time there, we went through a strategic review, the kind of thing that, you know, any organization does from time to time. And although we found that we do a great job of furthering careers of researchers, we fund projects that have great results, get published in top academic medical journals, it's often really hard to find a link between those projects that we fund and actual children. So we started to think about, you know, how do we maybe bring a little more sustainability to projects? How do we maybe, you know, get some good science actually to kids? And we went through a lot of things we looked at, you know, ways we can do this through grants, different things. But the area I latched on to, given my background in the alternative space, venture and private equity and such is, maybe we can think about how to commercialize some of these things. If you get them to market, you're getting them to pay the solutions to patients. So I started to explore ways that a private foundation might be able to do this. I latched onto something called program-related investment. I won't get too much into the weeds on that space unless you want to later. But it basically allows a private foundation to jump into doing mission-based investing, investing around our charitable purpose, but using sort of philanthropic dollars to go out and do things that others might find hard to do. So I started to learn about this and saw this as a tailor-made solution for what we were trying to do at the foundation. Shared some ideas with this around this with the rest of my board. It took a little work for us to learn about it, but basically got immediate and buy-in and some real excitement around this. So we jumped in and we started building an early stage venture program around children's health. Started investing in drugs and devices, diagnostics, digital health tools. And we've now been doing this for 5 or 6 years. We've got a really cool portfolio across lots of indications. They're early stage companies. So we're, a long ways to go. You've got trials and regulatory approval and all sorts of things you got to do, but they are, it's an amazing group of companies. And I have no doubt we are going to have some amazing successes out of that portfolio that's going to help kids, help their families, help the people, the adults those kids turn into. It's really exciting stuff.
That's awesome.
For me, I'll just finish up on one last thing there, which is, for me, this started as a project. Took over my life completely. It was amazing work, amazing science and technology. I love doing this work every day. And I looked at it and said, this is crazy. There's so much great opportunity. All of a sudden I was seeing things. This isn't just for philanthropy. There are amazing returns to be had. I want to spend all my time doing this, and I need to grow this beyond what we can do at the foundation. That's really where Spring Hood came out of, is an effort to take all this great work we're doing at our foundation and then set it up as a more traditional looking venture fund that will go out and get great returns around children's health, because it's an amazing, largely overlooked investment opportunity. So that's sort of how I got to where I am with Spring Hood, stemming from that work that I was doing with the Hood Foundation.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that, John. I love some of those thoughts. Mission-based investing, consistent with your purpose. Love what you're doing every day. And it all started with the project. It's always funny how there's a story behind things. Well, I want to unpack the story a little bit, because John, as we've gotten to know each other and you shared with me your story in greater detail and your family's story, it really just touched my heart. Each of us are a function of our heritage. I know how my parents and ancestors influenced me. My dad, even though he worked in corporate America for 30 years before he retired, the fact that he came to this country with $100 in his pocket as an immigrant and lived the American dream, to me, there's nothing more entrepreneurial than that. Each of us have different aspects of our family story that influences us. So unpack the foundation, unpack your family story a little bit for people, because I think everybody can reach back into their heritage and find something inspirational. And your story is just incredible. So would you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah. No, I'd love to. This is a cool thing, because this goes back like 150 or more years, in terms of my family's interest in children's health. So way before the foundation was set up, and that was, 80 years ago, but way before that, the operating company that supported the foundation, funded it through most of its history, was the Hood Milk Company, which for folks who know the New England area, it's sort of the largest dairy company in New England. And although it's not a family business anymore, family sold it off when I was a lot younger than I am now. It's still got pretty cool heritage that defines a lot of what we do, especially through the foundation. So company was started in 1846, and it's a little different than $100 in your pocket when you land on the shores of the U.S. But my great great grandfather, I'm a family member. If I probably didn't say that before, but I'm a family member. My great great grandfather was born on a farm up in Vermont and just like got like came down to Boston with nothing in his pocket to try to, you know, earn, make his fortune as a young man or whatever. And basically just started delivering milk, other people's milk. Just, he was, you know, a delivery boy. But then figured out how to just, you know, take and, you know, get a distribution business, and trains were emerging, and he started getting milk from New Hampshire and bringing it down. And then he bought a farm so that he'd have his own milk to deliver. And so he has built a real business. And as the business grew, then of course, it's like you get the next generation. He's like, sends his son off to college to learn about the farming and the dairy business and all these things. And son comes back and says, great, I'm going to work for dad. But you know, what I really want to do is the farming stuff's fine, but have you heard about this thing called pasteurization and bacteria? And let's actually think about what's going on in the world of science and how that's going to affect our business. And there's this really cool story about, and this is my great grandfather, who's Charles Hood, who the foundation is named after. And he's went to school at night to learn the science of bacteria. And he brought in pasteurization, and the company was so proud for so many years of, and you know, they marketed this and everything. But in the areas where they sold milk, neonatal deaths dropped in half, which didn't only happen in New England, it happened in other places, pasteurization, but they're really proud of the fact that they were the first to do it in this area. And they saved babies' lives. And they leveraged that, and they started to do more things. Or they developed an infant formula really early with milk and some vitamins, I think. I don't know. It was really cool. They got into sterilization, which it sounds so simple these days, but that was science back then. It's like, you know what? You need to be able to clean the tanks that hold the milk. You need clean sort of quality control from, you know, the farm all the way through to the delivery. And it was just really interesting because there was this science-based background through the thing all the way through. This was happening through the late 1800s, the early 1900s. And it's what set them apart as a company. It's why they dominated this market and ultimately grew to be, you know, a Fortune 500 company. That's how they differentiated themselves. That legacy is what led to the foundation. And I think, you know, my great grandfather started to do a lot of support researchers who were doing stuff around nutrition and the milk stuff, but he started to do a lot of other work. So, people were, my understanding is that there were researchers who were starting to ask for money for, I don't know, pediatric cancer, cystic fibrosis, whatever it might've been at the time, not just around sort of the nutrition of dairy. And that didn't belong in the dairy company anymore. So he set up some foundation before that I don't know what happened to that. But then there was the foundation that still bears his name today was set up. And we continue the legacy of that work. And what's really interesting to me is like, it's such a cool story. It's very different than other folks involved in children's health, where usually it's driven by some sort of family challenge or tragedy. Right. And it's not that our family hasn't had those things. We've multiple generations, and yeah, there are kids who have been very sick, and yeah, there are a couple of examples of family members who have died at a young age, but that's not what drove this. It really was early on, an interest and a desire to bring in great science and technology to make everyone's lives better. But particularly that child health, kids. So,
yeah, it's such an inspiring story, you know, because you think of the impact of using good science and how it reduced that infant mortality rate. I mean, it's just huge. I mean, you think about that. I mean, oftentimes when I'll speak with youth, I'll put a moldy orange up on a slide and I'll tell them, I'll say, you know, all of us have seen this a bunch of times. We've been lazy and left some fruit, you know, in the fruit bowl in the kitchen. And
I'm sure we got some there now.
Yeah, it's too warm and some mold or fungus grows on it, right? And, you know, for centuries, if not eons, people would look at that and see waste. And I tell them the story about how penicillin was created. Someone, instead of looking at it and saying, ew, and throwing it in the trash, said, maybe there's something scientific there for us to learn from. And it reminds me of the story with your family and how they looked at the situation, because they could have maximized their profits and just sold more and more milk, but it ate into their profits to have to change some of those processes. They probably had to invest in additional equipment, infrastructure, and there were some sacrifices that had to happen there, but it ended up helping the business and helping society at large.
Well, you nailed it there, which is, you know, it, and I think, again, I wasn't there, so you got to rely on sort of family legend and some old documents a little bit. But I think there was some pushback back with, between my great grandfather and my grandfather when he wanted to do this, you know, some of this scientific work. And he's like, no, you know, I want you to, you know, focus on being a good farmer. And he, you know, for whatever reason, he managed to push back enough that he was able to pursue the science. And it was, I'm sure, seen as a distraction at the time. Yeah. Yet that is the thing that allowed them to become a dominant player in the industry and just, you know, create a big company of tremendous value all the way through. I think about, you know, I don't know that I link that exact story with every investment I look at, but the general concept is always there, where, you know, there is tremendous value in solving real problems. And it's where people see, you know, well, kids aren't the buyer, or, you know, they don't vote, they don't make the purchasing decisions, whatever it is. It's, you know, it's not always the market people gravitate towards, but there are big markets there. People spend money on kids. People take care of kids.
Absolutely. Like, so I remember when I used to serve on the school board, I used to say that children are a third of our population, basically 0% of our taxpayers and 0% of the voters, but they're 100% of our future. And and that's what I think is so special about what you guys are doing at Springhood. So when you think about Springhood Ventures and some of the other social impact funds that are out there, tell me about some of the things that separate Springhood Ventures. If there are folks that are, you know, that have technologies, whether they're in academia or they're in the business sector, and they're focused in some form or fashion on pediatric health, what do they need to know about Springhood Ventures? What makes you guys different and unique?
So there are a lot of ways I can go with that one. So one of the things is, it can be challenging, and let me focus on the healthcare space a little bit. And the folks who are, you know, may have those good projects, so they're probably coming out of a life science scientific background or origin there. People tend to, even if they develop science where they might be thinking about kids or pediatrics, when they start to think about how do I commercialize this, they tend to say, okay, well, first I have to go and do this in adults. First I need, or there's an investor that like, show me the biggest addressable market right away.
Right.
So you've got something that can help with, you know, a pediatric heart condition. It's like, well, good, we got to go do the adults first. We got to do that. You use any example out there. Where I try to bring at least some different thinking, and it doesn't work with every company, but there are enough of them where it does, is think about, especially if you've developed something that can help kids, why don't you think about how you can really stay true to what your origins on it and build the business around kids. And I'm not telling you to ignore the adult market, but let's think about a business model that puts kids first. One of the challenges here, a lot of folks will look and say, well, you get small markets, you've got regulatory challenges. It's, there's an area for philanthropy. There are a lot of hurdles. People always see hurdles.
Yep.
Whenever I see the hurdles, I really try to step back and look at where are the companion advantages, let's call them that. Okay. So if you've got something in the medical side with kids, start with the FDA. You've got a lot of incentives. You can get things fast-tracked. You can get them there are some financial incentives, particularly on the drug side. You can run smaller clinical trials. You can actually get some good handholding and coaching on how to do it right the first time. These are all things, when I look at these advantages on the regulatory side with pediatrics, I see things that lower cost, they speed up timelines, they lower risk, bring these things in to make a better investment case. You'll never come back to pediatrics if you've already established yourself as a big player in an adult market. Never is maybe a little strong, but it's really hard. But if you start in pediatrics, you can often get great proof of concept and show that you've got value in your company early on, less money, faster, at, believe it or not, lower risk, where people think about pediatrics as being riskier. You can do it. You can reduce risk quicker. That's a great investment story. So it doesn't, I don't know that that really answers your whole sort of social impact question, but within my world of thinking about how do you take life science or healthcare investing and look at this social impact group, this population that needs that, there are some really good ways to think about it. I'm sure there are lots of other tracks I can go on with.
Yeah, no, I think that's fabulous. I think a great moral of that story, John, is that, you know, some people would look at those stones and see them as stumbling blocks. But you're basically saying, no, it's not a stumbling block. It's actually a stepping stone to get where you need to get to. And it's by looking at it differently. And I think that's one of the aspects of being a heart investor, being a social impact investor, is not necessarily looking at things the conventional way, but looking at it in an unconventional way to ultimately do the good that you want to do.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And the very nature of something that has social impact, I mean, it probably means it's ignored at some level.
Exactly. Right?
Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it that way. There's plenty of money there and it's, you know, you don't need to worry about it. I'm sure there are some very good things. There are some examples we could come up with that are social impact in nature, but they get enough money, so we don't put them in that category. Right. Anytime there's something that's ignored, you have to rethink how to do it because there's probably a reason it's getting ignored. So you have to put in that extra work to figure out how to make it, in this case, a good investment.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the things that make things good investments are certain disciplines and rigor that actually result in a better implementation and execution. Because I think that it's beyond some of the criteria that the government may use, which obviously the government has solved very few problems, or nonprofits use to try to generate their return or their objectives. Like you mentioned early on when you were talking about your kind of transition from the foundation to creating Springhood, you were applying some of those disciplines from the finance sector to say, okay, how can we actually get this available for patients? It's not just a paper. It's not just a poster. It's not just a patent, all the P's that the universities like. It's a product. It's for patients. It's those P's that we're interested in that can ultimately make an impact in patients' lives.
Yeah. No, I like to add in my S's, which are scale and sustainability. If you can get a solution to patients sustainably at scale, you're making a difference in the lives of those patients. But also to your point too, I've always been a big believer in this concept of tackle tough problems. If you can go out and figure out how to get something done, and whether it's, you know, people love to use the example of, you know, the technologies that came out of putting man on the moon. Those were very tough, challenging problems. Yet you get all this great technology that is used in so many different scenarios.
Right.
And I see child health as being a very, you know, having similar prospects around it, where if you've got these things where, yeah, it can be really tough to figure out how to take care of a kid or solve a child health problem. But once you do that, it's very easy to translate so many of those things into all sorts of adult markets. It's not easy to go the other way. But if you tackle the tough problem early, you can do a lot with it. So
yeah, and that's a good lesson learned too. Thanks for sharing that, John. Well, so we've discussed the mission of this podcast basically is to help educate and inspire others to become heart investors, social impact investors. We obviously both feel a need to mobilize people with good intentions to stand up and to try to make a difference. And oftentimes they have to stand against special interests in business or in government or other places that want to preserve the status quo because they profit off of it. They gain power on it, whatever it may be. And so trying to get the social impact investors, these heart investors, to invest in new technologies so we can replace some of the rotting old growth, let's say in our healthcare system, with new growth that's actually helping patients is something that's, I know, close to both of our hearts. And so as a fellow heart investor, I'm wondering how you think we can inspire more people to become heart investors. How do you think we can do that?
That's a very tough question. I come back to, I sort of touching on this a little bit with the comments I was just making, but solving problems results in solutions that people, I'll use the word buy. It's not always buy, but if they will adopt. If there are some solutions that are tough to adopt, and that we know those solutions are there. But for the most part, if we're talking about, say, you know, some sort of a healthcare intervention for kids, and you can see a big unmet need, if you go out and solve the problem, you've got to look at it, really solving it all the way through to the patient, not just coming up with a technology that works, but it's going back to, again, can you get it to that solution to patients? Can you get it there sustainably? Can you do it at scale? If you can do this, the market is always there. It's, you know, people, especially with health, there's sort of this moral imperative to adopt the solution. So I say that in the interest of encouraging people to go after sort of the big projects, the tough ones, the ones that are going to be, I overuse term, but game-changing solutions. Uh-huh. Incremental solutions that, yeah, might streamline something a little bit, save a little money in the healthcare system here or there, be just another, you know, drug or device that does what another drug or device is doing just a little bit better. I'm sure there's a buyer for it and there's money to be made, but the real wins are had when you come up with something that's truly disruptive, truly new. And it can happen even with a small population or in something that you're not even thinking about that much. It's sort of obscure, but it's coming out and really coming up with a new kind of solution. How do you, you know, and the solution isn't always in the sort of the headline product. It might be in how you distribute it, how you, you know, the population you bring that solution to, whatever it is. There are a lot of ways to think about it. And apologies for being a little vague with that, but it's really this nature of how do you change how we think about a problem that's vexed us for a long time, and coming up with a solution. I'm a big believer, if you push hard enough, you can find an economically viable way to solve most problems.
I agree. Well, gosh, time flew by today, John. Thank you for joining us and sharing your story and your insights. It's our hope that for our listeners, by hearing John's insights, learning about Spring Hood Ventures, and learning John's story, you too have been inspired. Your heart has been touched to create some positive change in our world, maybe even doing something to help the health of children. Our world certainly needs more heart investors. We also want to thank our sponsors for their support. We look forward to interviewing heart investors from across the globe every week. To learn more, visit us at www.heartinvestors.org. We already have over our first dozen guests or so lined up. So until next time, as we always say, instead of being manipulated by those in the media and industry and government by having us focus on the differences between people and all the negativity in the world, let's focus on how people can make a difference. Make it a great day.
Thanks for having me, Brian.